It's time to bring in none other than David Terechuk. It's time for The Media Beat. You can find David on his own website, themediabeat.us. Also, he is a PBS television correspondent reporting on ethics and belief. Good morning, David.
Well, hello.
That sounds like almost like the cliffhanger. Well, hello. You know,
Well, hello. Hello from New York City, the media capital of the world.
Okay, now
what could be more dramatic than that?
I won't go near Bill de Blasio running for president.
Another runner for the 2020 Democratic nomination for president of the United States comes from New York City.
The man who holds an anti-Trump protest rally inside Trump Towers.
Brave, yep.
And then
gets heckled to death.
Gosh. People ask me why. And I said last week that if Bill de Blasio declared to run for president, that I would have to declare myself as a candidate for president simply because...
I was wondering how long it would take for you to get around to it.
Simply as I have as much chance as winning the Democratic nomination as Bill de Blasio does.
Well, you might be able to say that of several of the 20-plus. What is it now, 24, 25?
Yeah, but Bill de Blasio is just... we can't even go into it. He's so complex. But I was going to lead off with that, but then this morning coming in, just when you thought you had gotten away from it all these sealed files are coming to light now out of this investigation by Mueller.
Matters are being unsealed in the redacted Mueller report. Sure.
And with the judge.
And now the judge has ordered that the details of Mike Flynn's phone calls, at least, especially with his exchanges with the Russian ambassador, are now having to be made public, which is a very interesting development. Yeah, right.
Well, what's interesting about this is there's 12 other cases that Mueller handed off that obviously are going to do the same things, where all of a sudden these cases become unsealed and all of a sudden you don't have to redact those things anymore because they're public.
Yeah, I wonder what the overall impact is likely to be, though. What are the effects of having a free press and an energetically investigative press like we've had revived, of course, in the 2 years or more since Trump was elected? Was that it has a double-edged sword kind of effect. All the coverage of, for instance, Washington Post and the New York Times and CNN and various other people who really got their teeth into the whole Mueller story while Mueller was conducting his own investigations and basically coming out with bits and pieces of it over the last 18 months or so. So have had one effect which I don't think was intended by anybody, which is that the public sort of got inured to each new piece of information as it came out, so that when the Mueller report, albeit still in a redacted form, was finally out and we could read the whole thing, it didn't have the impact that it might have had otherwise. Preet Bharara, formerly the United States attorney for this part of the country here in New York, had an interesting reflection on this. He said, imagine if I was putting a case together and it came out. He's saying, try and think of the Mueller report as a case that I might have put together and then just plumped before the public when I opened my indictments and then went to court. We benefit in a sense of being able to put everything together and then just delivering it as a big package. What happened with Mueller is that try and imagine what it would be like if you'd heard everything that's in the Mueller report for the first time when Mueller actually sent it to the Attorney General and the Attorney General sent it to Congress. Then it would have had an extraordinary cumulative or altogether kind of impact, whereas so much of it was already familiar. And I think the Trump camp took full advantage of that. So being able to say no new news, and in fact, building up we know what they did with the notion of exoneration. They sort of slapped the label exoneration on it, on both aspects of it, both the election tampering and the obstruction of justice issues got compounded together. Exoneration applied to both areas, even though it didn't apply formally to the second one at all. The whole thing was blunted. And I'm sure that the effect of all the very good investigative journalism played a large part in that blunting process.
You know, what's interesting about law and about this case, if you remember, go back to Watergate and you remember everything that was coming out in the papers, and the papers are doing a great job, everything was basically stagnant until one thing happened: the tapes.
Absolutely, yeah.
And all of a sudden, that blew a hole in everything, and that was something that happened outside the realm of you ever thinking it happened. I don't think there's going to be anything that dramatic, but I do believe that with all these other cases that will come up, people higher up in the chain are going to be implicated in some interesting investigations here. Especially if a White House lawyer told somebody to basically lie, that's pretty impressive if that really does come out and start to be discussed.
Yes. I'm going to just interject, yes, 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 and, because, and it's probably going to ruin the rest of my day for saying this, but really trying to be diplomatic here, after pretty much two unrelenting years of breaking news and bombshells, I don't know whether you've still got the room.
Yeah, that's where I disagree with that. I think that a focus for impeachment is not acceptable now, unless the Democrats just want to put it on record. But I do believe that if something comes out in one of these other cases where somebody within the White House lied, I'm not saying the president's going to get impeached. I'm going to say there's more upper level people that have more questions to answer in front of the House if these things come leaking out. That's all I'm saying, is that these
yeah,
things...
Yeah, and I think we can say in return to that, Marshall, that once that happens, it's all too likely, given inured public reaction to all of this now. As you say, bombshell after bombshell. And if one more bombshell happens, the like of which a senior White House person is found really to be in the wrong, I'm not sure that people's reaction to that is going to be all that much more shocked either. That's the trouble with this kind of free-for-all at the moment. And of course, it's all caused by the fact that we have a White House that is not observing general norms anyway. It's an aberrant kind of administration, and it's dying perhaps a death of a thousand cuts, but it may not be. It may be just enduring a thousand cuts and continuing to get away with it. That's equally possible, I think.
I want to switch something here, and I don't know if Jill saw this or not, but the Democratic National Committee commissioned a poll to put up on the internet. Who's your choice for president? And I saw it, and I didn't click on it because I did not want to get caught in the wave of giving my email address out. But several people did click on it, and it is sponsored by the Democratic National Committee. And in the end, they have to send you the results of the poll. I'm not in for that. I'm not into giving my I don't give anything to the Democratic National Committee, and never will.
I got
So let me just explain this, what happened. And it's so deep. It's so deep to get into it to find the results. Yesterday at about 6:30 in the evening, somebody published the results that the email was sent back to them. And like Bernie Sanders had like 36% and Joe Biden had like 22%. Mm-hmm. And the rest all followed. All of a sudden, that poll disappeared from social media.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Yes.
But this morning, Biden's surprising strength prompts questions. Can anyone stop him?
A year out, yes.
But that's neither exactly. So this is. Oh, I really hate
this
to say this.
This is the insanity.
This is deja vu all over again.
It's the insanity of the American
550 days ahead of time, where the pontificating game is on, and the prediction game is on even further, and how foolish people are going to look in November 2020.
Yeah,
what they were saying at this point in time.
I had just said to Jill yesterday that, you know, being I have the person that I support, okay? I'm set. So I don't care what anybody else says right now. I don't care what the polls say. I don't care what politicians say. I don't care what other people say. I'm set because we're a year out. And you know what? In 6 months from now, maybe I'll be set differently. Or in 7 months. But right now, I'm set. And
your choices may have changed by then, too.
That's exactly right.
Your range of choices, yeah.
But this is what's wrong with the American election system. You to start a campaign and furiously have six or seven people running presidential campaigns a year out from the first primary is gone crazy. And of course, the president of the United States has been running for re-election ever since he was elected. He reformed his committee.
Well, that's not new. But I mean, actually, this whole development has been long in the making. We can't. This is something that we cannot actually blame Trump for. And in any case, Trump is just a symptom rather than a prime cause of the mess that we're in, I think. And sure, you know, you can look around the world for comparisons. And my own old home country takes care of its elections in a period of 3 weeks. There's obviously electioneering going on before that, but an actual formal campaign in the United Kingdom only lasts 3 weeks. And in many other European countries, it's a similar pattern. The actual campaigning and indeed the spending of vast amounts of money on that campaigning begins in the United States of America a hell of a lot earlier than any other civilized country. It makes for uncivilized conduct, I think.
And I think it also leads to people. You wonder why people go out and vote, because by the time it's time to vote. You're just plain worn out with the networks and everything. You're just plain worn out with it all. You're just plain tired of it all. You know, a year and a half of running for president is just crazy. It's so tiring, and it's amazing. It's embarrassing, as a matter of fact. That's all you can say. It's embarrassing.
And while you're on the topic, please. Explain the European election in five words or less. Please explain for the rest
elections,
of us.
Elections, yes.
Yeah, and now, of course, and you know, I hope everyone's sitting down.
Boris Johnson.
Right,
The man who has a new haircut for this new role in his life.
Oh, I've got to look at the picture again. Yes, he does. It's been trimmed. And again, this is where I always say, oh, and by the way, these guys all went to school with each other. They all know each other. It's all a closed shop. In the same way, P.S., Marshall and I were talking about something. We were talking about, who was it? Was it Dianne Feinstein? Who was it? Yeah, yes. Dianne Feinstein walking through the Capitol with her iPhone turned out so that everybody could see who she was talking to. And then when you think about it, you know, Feinstein and Pelosi, they're all from the same bloody district. It's just, anyhow. So let's please go to the European elections for one quick second.
We'll start with a narrow focus in part of Europe, which is still just conceivably considered Europe, that's the United Kingdom, my old home country. You've got an interesting sign there about elections. The news of the day overnight is that that talks between the Prime Minister, Mrs. May, and the leader of the opposition, the Labour Party, have broken down, and no achievement has come out of that. No agreement and no plan, which is what in theory they were hoping for, given the fact that we're in a mess with Theresa May's leaving Europe plan, the plan which no one seems to prepared to vote for and support in Parliament, which of course is the ultimate decision maker on these issues, constitutionally speaking. The only resolution to this now, as far as the opposition is concerned anyway, is to go for what they want, which is an election, a general election in the country as a whole, in which, of course, they hope to depose Mrs. May, who has promised to resign anyway if she gets her agreement through on her own side. With the forces of her own party voting for it, which at the moment is just not enough for it to get through. So we've got a very complicated picture yet again emerging, even though there's been this sudden burst of bipartisan activity. That too has now failed. So we go into a round of elections. There are so many national elections going on in Europe this particular season, and then we have on top of that the overarching election process of the European elections. If your country is a member of the European Union, you have a vote in the European Parliament, weirdly, that applies to Britain, even though Britain's on the way out. What's exercising British political pundits at the moment is how the ruling Conservative Party is going to do in those elections, and it's every indication
not well.
That they're going to get a walloping. Or a shellacking, as President Obama once called it, he being experienced in midterm defeats. We have an even bigger catastrophe looming for Theresa May's administration.
Now, how does that affect?
A thorough thrashing in the European elections.
And how does the overarching European election, because this is where I think people are conflating things simply because, you know, if you read a headline, you're doomed.
I'll say. all this is far too complicated for any headline writer, I tell you.
It is. No, so you see election and the assumption and, you know, I bet you could line 10 people up on the street and 3 would say it's for Brexit and 3 would say it's a general for Britain and... 2 would say
well,
they don't
it's
care.
Neither of those. It's an election to send a representative to the European Parliament, and that's about it. The European Parliament is not an executive body. It doesn't. It passes legislation of a kind, Europe-wide legislation, but it doesn't have any executive function. And the general oversimplification that opponents, of course, use all the time. Opponents of all European institutions, that is, they say, well, it calls itself a parliament, but it is that only as a literal, only in the sort of literal sense of the word. It's a big talking shop, and who gets elected there is of absolutely no importance. On the other hand, great opponents of the party. Big opponents of the Parliament and of all European institutions together, especially the European Union, in the form, for instance, of Nick Farage, Nigel Farage, rather, President Trump's great friend in Britain, the previous leader of the United Kingdom Independence Party and a far-right extremist in many people's views, has created a new party, and guess which party is in the lead in the polls?
And how did that happen? And how did that happen?
That is, it's been turned into, and of course, why wouldn't it be? It's been turned into an opportunity to, you know, exercise your vote this time in the form of a referendum of what you think about Europe. And in many ways, that means what do you think about the way that the government has been handling the Brexit issue for the last 2 years.
So
inevitably, the far-right party is doing best of all. I say inevitably. I mean, I think with the benefit of some hindsight and some, you know, some overall overview, you can say that. But I think if you're in the midst of it, as many British politicians are, I think it's come as a horrible surprise and a horrible lesson for them.
And what's really fascinating is, you remember all of those non-binding votes when I was trying to figure out what's a non-binding vote?
Well, non-binding is pretty clear, but what's interesting is meaningful.
I meant meaningful. Oops, right. A meaningful vote
as opposed to the hundreds of thousands of meaningless votes
that
the Parliament has passed in the meantime over centuries.
So the meaningful vote here is you're essentially, and this is what I don't. So the Brexit part, whatever that means, by you know, is in the. Leave.
As we get towards the Halloween deadline. Of course, it has to be Halloween, doesn't
right.
it? That is the deadline. It's the final ignominy, I think, to put that particular label on it. The date for it to happen fully is October 31st.
But so this particular election is in its own way meaningful, quote, because... It's
indicative. I think the other word that you use for votes is indicative. And this is certainly indicative, highly indicative, I'd say.
And this should put to bed the idea of doing another referendum.
Yeah, as an instrument of policy making, it is certainly, it veers towards the crude side. And I trust British politicians have learned the lesson. On the other hand, there is a strong lobby still, getting stronger each time you read about it, it seems, for having a second actual Brexit referendum, i.e. giving the British public the opportunity to reverse themselves on this issue, which the people who want us, the main forces amongst the Remain faction, you know, Remain in Europe, they're arguing that it is a opportunity for the British public to say, well, we got it wrong last time and now we want to get it right. It's a high risk strategy, of course, because you may well end up with the British public saying just the same again, and probably with as thin and unpersuasive a majority as well.
Yeah. All right, Marshall is giving me the hook. I don't know why. I'm having the best time, so I'm going
me
to...
Me too.
All right, so we are going to thank you very much and say, next week, David Tereshchuk, The Media Beat.
Till next week. Thank you.